You ever been a woman?
What?
A woman. Some fat, hairy, ugly hillbilly's wet dream.
Look, I realize that you suffered. There's no question.
Suffered? You don't know what suffering is, counselor. Like it says in Galatians 3, have you suffered so many things in vain? I learned from the get-go in the joint to get in touch with the soft, nurturing side of myself, the feminine side.
Well, I'm open to some sort of discussion on compensation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what shall be my compensation, sir, for being held down, sodomized by four white guys? Or four black guys? Shall my compensation be the same? What is the formula for compensation, sir?
What is the formula for compensation? What is the formula for compensation, my friends? What is the formula for compensation if I'm being held down by four white guys or four black guys and brutally sodomized like Robert De Niro playing Max KD in that 1991 remake of the film noir classic, Cape Fear. Now, the original, Max KD, was played by Robert Mitchum. And Gregory Peck played the lawyer. But I don't know what to tell you, man. Do you know how to get in touch with your feminine side? Do you know how to... Have you ever been a woman, as Max KD would say? That's right, people. Anywho, it is December the 21st, 2019, and it is like barely after 4 a.m. Saturday morning, people. You should get up and get out of bed if you're on the East Coast. You should get up and get out of bed at Saturday morning. Time to get up. Have you ever been a woman? Have you ever had to be a woman in a prison? And what will be the compensation, counselor? What shall be the compensation for being brutally sodomized by a couple black guys or a couple white guys or a couple Mexicans? What shall be? The compensation. Yep, that little audio segment is from the film Cape Fear, directed by, I believe, Scorsese. And yeah, it was a remake. I don't know. I like both the original and the remake. I think the remake's pretty good. I will say that Robert De Niro is one of my favorite actors. Do I appreciate his political philosophies and his voting habits and the general ideological direction of Mr. De Niro? Not really. He seems like he's become kind of a foolish, grouchy, nasty old man. But I gotta say, he's also and has been a very talented actor. And so yeah, I appreciated the role he played as Maxwell KD in Cape Fear. first topic. One of the things that occurred to me recently, technically yesterday, but I've been thinking about this off and on for a few months now, is this idea that it's possible that the deep state, the powers that be, are using various forms of disclosure as cover. What I mean by that is this. What if the people who quote-unquote run the world, you know, they run the world, they run everything, they run the Arby's, they run the internet. What if the people that run the world have been deliberately releasing certain truth bombs? And I've mentioned this in the past, folks. What are truth bombs for? Well, what if the purpose of these truth bombs is as cover, as a way to sort of get the people off the scent, so to speak, of the real issue? What if all this random shit, like the fucking crap about the U.S. veterans who were deployed to that base, I think in, was it Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan? Anyways, one of the stands, and they all got cancer. That's the kind of shit that you wouldn't expect to ever hear about except for maybe 50 years later when every single one of the soldiers is dead. Kind of like how my father's Navy records accidentally got destroyed in a flood at the Pentagon back in the 60s. Just a terrible flood accident at the Pentagon. Fuck. A lot of people's records get destroyed very conveniently by the Department of Defense. For all sorts of very convenient financial reasons. Another reason to think about before you join the military, you need to know something. They don't give a shit about you. Okay? From their perspective, you are a tool, you are a weapon, you are an object, you're not a person. So if you think that the government's going to take care of you after you've served overseas, I don't know. I think you're kind of confused. I think you need to wake up. They will probably take advantage of you, and you will find yourself shit out of luck. And if you find yourself with cancer because, hey, like Obama telling the, what was it, the U.S. Ronald Reagan to get as close to Fukushima as you can possibly get, you know, just after the meltdown in March of, 2011, that kind of shit, nobody takes responsibility for it. You think Obama would? Do you think Obama gives a shit that he exposed hundreds of U.S. sailors to radiation? And for what purpose? Probably to provide cover for TEPCO. Probably as some kind of weird legal fucking maneuver. Lawyers don't give a shit about you either. Oh yeah, is this earth-shattering that the lawyers don't give a fuck about you? They don't. For a lawyer, you might be an opportunity to win. You might be a grand prize. You might be part of a class action lawsuit. You might be a means to money. But to a lawyer, that's all you are. You're a game. A game they want to play. So like I've said before, you know, what if they're doing this disclosure of all these stories about the government doing this and doing that, stories about other administrations, stories about lies and wars and crimes. What if all of this, including the fucking impeachment, is really just a big smokescreen? A big smokescreen to cover up the fact that all hell is about to break loose. It's kind of like the repo bullshit. The only reason to be so fucking scared of a recession at this point, because kids, boys and girls, I'm 50 years old. I've lived through a couple quote-unquote recessions. And as, you know, as much as they suck, not one of them was the end of the world. I mean, yeah, I guess the last great recession that supposedly ended in 2009, yeah, I guess that was pretty bad. And like I said, it supposedly ended. I don't think it did. But right now, they're all deathly afraid. Deathly afraid. Oh my God, what if we have a recession? What happens then? And the question is this, what is a recession from a depression? Because I don't think there was ever an economic recovery. I don't think there was ever any kind of a great boom. Even the government will admit that this economic recovery is the weakest on record, going back more than 100 years. This is the weakest economic rebound ever in the modern age. The weakest. It isn't the second weakest or the third. It is number fucking one. So given that this has been the weakest recovery in the last 100 years, yeah, I guess a recession from that's pretty bad. And that's why there can't be one. But I think it's worse than that, folks. I think even this economic crap is covering up something, and I don't know for certain what it is. I know in the past I've talked about the issues of ecology and the environment, and I know some of you, your eyes glaze over because you think that the global warming thing is a political campaign. And I believe, yes, it's being used for that. But just because it's being used for that doesn't mean it's false. Okay? Just because it's being used by a bunch of statists and communists and douchebags doesn't imply that it doesn't exist. You need to separate out these issues, people. Okay? Throughout history, governments have used real issues and fake ones for other agendas. So this could be real or it could be fake. All I can tell you is when I look around Seattle, when I look around Washington State in 2019, shit does not seem right, folks. The weather's not right. The ecology's not right. Too many insects missing. Too much death. And if I'm to believe the official information, the oceans are as bad or worse. The largest living thing on Earth, the Great Barrier Reef, the largest living thing in the history of the world, is almost dead. Is that normal? Is that something that's no big deal? You see, I know some of you are like, well, I don't believe in global warming and CO2 is fine. Fine, CO2 is fine. Explain to me how the death of the Great Barrier Reef is okay. Explain to me how the collapse of the salmon populations in Washington State is okay. Explain to me how all the orcas leaving the fucking Puget Sound, either leaving or dying, is a good sign. I think that when animals leave an area, it's because they can no longer live there. I think when animals die off, it's because they can't find anywhere else to go. So I don't know what is going on, but I can tell you with my own eyes, it doesn't look good. And I don't give a shit if it's global warming, global cooling, pole shift, ice age, Maunder minimum bullshit, fuck you. It doesn't really matter. The outcome will still be the same. 20 years from now, half the people on planet Earth will be dead. So I don't really give a fuck, folks. You can pick whatever poison of the week you want to pick as the thing. But there is something going on. And a lot of this revelation, a lot of this information that's coming out, especially all this Q bullshit, it seems like one big psyop to keep people confused, to keep people off center, to keep people focused on the wrong goddamn thing. It's magic. It's misdirection. Next topic. Next topic, interesting fucking article I want to read. I'll probably read a couple articles because it's so early, and I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't even be podcasting. God damn it. This was published on Netflix yesterday, peoples. Netflix yesterday. Headline, dystopian toilet adds raging quad pain for employees taking Netflix and poo breaks. And I read. And this, again, was published on Zero Hedge yesterday. And under the authorship of Tyler Durden, which can mean whatever. For those who deal with the occasional stubborn poop, a new startup's toilet design will add a new level of difficulty to that prize fight. Your quads will be on fire. Designed by UK-based Standard Toilet, the new throne, titled at a tilted, excuse me, tilted. Wow. Tilted at a 13-degree angle, supposedly provides a myriad of health benefits. While encouraging employees to abandon the occasional Netflix and poo break due to the fact that it becomes uncomfortable to sit on after just 5 minutes of use. Well, that's a great fucking toilet. The dystopian toilet approved by the British Toilet Association. Oh boy, aren't they a great bunch of fucking guys. The dystopian toilet approved by the British Toilet Association was inspired by a series of annoyances, according to Standard Toilet founder Mahabir Gill, yeah, that sounds English, who says he discovered that over 4 decades as a consulting engineer, he became increasingly annoyed by long waits to use the toilet. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mahabir. Discovering that some co-workers were sleeping on the pot, according to Wired. Quote, its main benefit is to the employers, not the employees, Gill told the outlet, adding, it saves the employer money. The fight to clamp down on toilet time has begun, it seems. After all, the alternative toilet market is booming. Japanese-style toilets are finally breaking into Western markets, and products like Squatty Potty are offering us revolutionary new ways to sit on the toilet. Waterless compost toilets are catering to eco-conscious poopers, while others believe the future is rimless. Well, you want a rim job? But is policing your pooing a step too far? The Standard Toilet was given public backing by the British Toilet Association in November, and retails between £150 and £500, respectively. And Gill is already in talks with several local councils and major motorway service stations to distribute his product, and believes their market extends to train stations, pubs, shopping malls, and offices. This is from Wired. That said, according to the report, a July survey realized that London workers spend nearly 30 minutes taking a shit. Holy fuck. Holy fuck. So yeah, where do we begin with the reinvention of the toilet? Where do we begin, folks, with the reinvention of the toilet? Fuck. Well, firstly, as you get older, there's nothing like a good poop. As you get older, there's nothing like your internal gumbus flowing out in large solid chunks. The worst kind of poop is the liquidy one. I don't like the liquidy one. The second worst kind of poop is the burny liquidy one. Actually, it's number one, really. Yes, you go to a Thai food restaurant, the star system is 1 through 5, and you say, I'll do a 5. And the young Asian woman looks at you and says, aren't you old? Shouldn't you do a 2? Shouldn't you be coming here at 5 p.m. with all the other old people? Yeah, I probably should. But I'm not gonna. I have never been a person to exploit the break time, with very few exceptions. I have had to work on contract for Microsoft in recent years. And for a short period of time, because I'd started smoking cigarettes again, I experimented with the e-cigarette called Juul. That's J-U-U-L. Juul. And yeah, I would take breaks because you couldn't do it inside. You don't want to vape that shit inside. I would walk outside the building and vape my vape for a couple minutes and come back in. And here's the thing, that particular contract, it was really shitty. It was managed by a bunch of Chinese people. I think that I was just there to fulfill a quota, which is funny. When you're the white person fulfilling a quota, that's when things get fun. And it was a terrible team, and they were terrible people. And to you out there, buddy, if you can hear me, buddy, because one of the dudes, you know, they all take a good white man nickname, these Chinese programmers, when they get here. This guy was named Buddy. But I gotta tell you, that was ironic, because he was a huge fucking scumbag. And if I ever see him again, which, again, if the world doesn't explode, I might be doing another Microsoft contract here, you know, sometime in May. If I ever see Buddy again, I'm gonna tell him to fuck off. And yeah, it's not because he's Chinese, no. You cannot blame the Chinese for Buddy. You can't blame the Chinese for Mao Zedong. And you can't blame the Chinese for Buddy. The reason why Buddy's a scumbag is because Buddy is a fucking scumbag. And it has zero to do with being Chinese. That's what's fucking important here. You see, a lot of people, they love to say, oh, you don't like me because I'm Mexican. You don't like me because I'm Indian. You don't like me because I'm black or Chinese or whatever. Danish. Fuck the Danish. No, no, no. Other than people from Denmark, who I categorically mostly hate, it's not about the color of your skin, your religion, or where the fuck you were born, buddy. The fact that I think you're a douchebag, buddy, is all about you. It's got nothing to do with anything else but you in particular being a giant piece of shit. Which, you know, related to the toilet thing, it's a good subject. But I've never been one to spend a lot of time on the toilet. I do enjoy a good poop, not the greasy ones, not the watery ones, not the ones that burn through my a-hole because I had Thai food the night before and didn't know when to stop. I like a good solid poop that is consistent and hard and rigid and scrapey. I like the poop that results from onions and kidney beans. I like the poop that represents the manifestation of industrial wood fiber. That's the poop that makes me happy in the morning. That is the poop that brings me joy. Next topic, don't want to spend more time on the revolutionary torture toilet. I will say this, the British Toilet Association sounds like some type of Monty Python bullshit. I'll be honest with you. It sounds like a Monty Python gimmick. Yeah, that's how I feel about the British fucking Toilet Association or the fucking English Poop Association or the First Queensley the first Queensley regiment dedicated to proper stool. The Queen has a regiment of poopers. The regimental crest of the poopers is the giant brown spot. The sigil of the poopers is the toilet lid. This article appeared on Zero Hedge yesterday as well. Headline, and again, the nom de plume, the author is Tyler Durden, but that doesn't really mean anything. Headline, like I said, off of Zero Hedge yesterday. Headline, at least 61 U.S. veterans who guarded contaminated ex-Russian base died or have cancer. And I read on. At least 61 U.S. Special Operations Forces soldiers who were deployed to a former Soviet base just a few hundred miles from the Afghanistan border have either died or have cancer, according to a new report by McClatchy, D.C.'s Tara Kopp. The deployment, which began shortly after the 9/11 attacks, were to a military site in Uzbekistan called Karshi-Khanabad. I think that's how you pronounce it. Known as K2. I wonder why they picked K2. Probably because nobody could pronounce Karshi-Khanabad. That's an army thing to do. I was in the army. Yep. It was leased by the United States from the Uzbek government weeks after the 2001 terrorist incident, as it was in close proximity to Al-Qaeda and Taliban targets. The U.S. troops were greeted by radiation hazard warning signs, black goo oozing from the ground, and pond water that glowed green, according to the report. Now let's stop right there. I was a young lieutenant once, which means I had a platoon once, and if I was in the field and I went to a base, you know, as part of a training exercise, let's say I was in Korea. And just so you know, there was this little thing that happened between 1950 and 1953. You know, the armistice was in 53. Yeah, armistice does not mean peace, oh, by the way, stupid fucks. Anyways, there was this little thing called the Korean War, which technically has not ended. And a lot of nasty shit happened during the Korean War. A lot of bombs were dropped. So if you're about to say, Dan, yawn, you're going to give me an example of something that doesn't even apply, fuck you. Also, there's this little thing called Hanta fever. You ever hear of Hanta fever? Do you know what it's named after? The Han River. Yeah, it's hemorrhagic fever from mouse poop. And guess what? To this day, still an issue if you're working with troops in the field in Korea. As a lieutenant, if I came across a situation that was hazardous to the troops and there was an option to not stay at that location, do I A, stay at the location because maybe my commanding officer said you got to be here and don't ask any questions? Or B, do you call up your commanding officer on the fucking radio and say, sir, excuse me, but there's fucking black goo oozing from the fucking ground. The pond water, you know, it glows green at night. That's fucked. And there are signs all over the place, and I can read it, saying, radiation hazard, don't come here. Maybe we shouldn't bivouac here this, you know, tonight, sir. There's lots of space in Uzbekistan. So yeah, let's read on. K2 was contaminated with chemical weapons remnants, radioactive processed uranium, and other hazards, according to documents obtained by McClatchy. At least 61 of the men and women who served at K2 had been diagnosed with cancer or died from the disease, according to a 2015 Army study on the base. But that number may not include the Special Operations Forces deployed to K2 who were likely not counted due to the secrecy of their missions, the study reported. According to the report, the Defense Department knew K2 was contaminated from the start based on documents obtained by McClatchy, which are now being made public. After Uzbek soldiers who prepared the base fell ill in 2001, boy, that's a sign, isn't it? The soldiers setting things up, getting sick. U.S. Central Command ordered an intelligence review of the hazards at the facility. Guess that wasn't a very good review. Ground contamination at Karshi Khanabad Airfield poses health risks to U.S. forces deployed there, reads the classified report dated November 6, 2001, which added that the tent city the U.S. military was building, which included tents for eating, sleeping, and showering, were in some cases directly on top of soil that probably was contaminated by four separate hazards. First, there was a missile storage facility that had exploded in June 1993. Ground contamination from the explosion and subsequent expulsion of missile propellant throughout the area is very likely, the report said. Two other hazards listed were an abandoned fuel storage facility and an abandoned aircraft maintenance facility identified as the likely sources of the black goo, which the report said is almost likely a combination of oils, hydraulic fluids, glues, paints, solvents, and lubricants. Oh, that all sounds real nice. The fourth hazard noted in the report was that the northeast corner of the tent city was likely affected by runoff from a chemical weapons decontamination site, which had appeared on U.S. intelligence imagery in 1987. A separate Army environmental health study of K2 in November 2001 found small areas of dirt contaminated with asbestos and low-level radioactive processed uranium, both from the destruction of Soviet missiles. Additional assessments revealed pools of solvents around 3 feet underground. Part of this area has already been fenced off by U.S. forces as an expansion area, reads November 15, 2001 document obtained by McClatchy. To call this site a landfill is an insult to landfills. McClatchy has spoken with several veterans who were stationed at K2 who are now speaking out because of the difficulties faced in having the Department of Veteran Affairs to cover their medical treatment. That's not surprising. Quote, after returning from combat years later, we are all coming down with various forms of cancer that the Department of Veterans Affairs is refusing to acknowledge, according to retired Army Chief Warrant Officer Scott Welsh, a Special Operations Military Intelligence Officer who deployed to K2 in October 2001 and who now has thyroid cancer, which was diagnosed in 2014. Eventually, warning signs were erected. Outside the berm, a new bright yellow sign went up with black and red letters that said, "Danger, keep out, chemical weapons." Another black and white sign, "Danger off limits, radiation hazard," was in front of a row of ponds nicknamed Skittles after the candy because the water glowed bright green but often had other colors too. The ponds were located just outside the berm. Wow. That reminds me of a story by H.P. Lovecraft, A Color Out of Space. Yeah, you should read A Color Out of Space and then think about these fucking soldiers going to this fucking place. How disgusting. Oh my God. Several veterans who served at K2 are preparing a letter to Congress to ask for help. I'm sure that'll work out. Please come to our aid to assist us. I'm going to let you guys read the rest. I don't want to read the rest of this. You know, I don't have to tell you. So far, I will say, according to this article, the VA, Veterans Affairs, refuses to help. And if that surprises you, you have never been around the military or its aftermath. I'm going to tell you guys something. It's real simple. If you are currently on a military pension, there's a good chance in the next decade you will lose it, or it will be so debased that it will be pointless. Like, either your pension will go away or it will be inflated away. I'm telling you this because this is exactly what happened to Red Army retirees in the early 90s. As the Soviet Union fell apart, those pensions that were due to Red Army soldiers, including World War II veterans, yeah, young people, teenagers who fought against the Nazis and survived, shit, their pensions were completely, yeah, nuked. I don't think they care about you if you serve, okay? I don't think they care about you if you served in peacetime like I did, or if you served in wartime. They don't care. They would just prefer you serve and then go home and then get your job driving trucks and then shut the fuck up. That's what they want. And I don't know, you know, I've covered this issue in the past. There is a history, especially since World War II, of the Department of Defense using soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen as guinea pigs. So I'm going to even be more audacious here and say the following. It's plausible that the DOD knew exactly what they were doing. It is plausible that the DOD knew exactly how dangerous this place was, okay? This was fucking 2001, not 1941. We've been around the world a couple times by then. We understood nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. So there is zero chance that a survey team did not go in and say this place is death. And there's a high likelihood that that survey team went in and said, this place is death, but the DOD has a new pill called the It'll Cure Radiation, another Gumbus pill. Probably doesn't kill anything, but hey, they got a new pill from a company making money. Money off the military-industrial complex. You gotta have a job. This new pill needs a test, an experiment. It needs guinea pigs. Why don't we put soldiers at this nasty-ass old Soviet base and see what happens? We'll give half of them the pill, the other half a placebo, and see what happens. It would not be the first time that the United States military experimented on soldiers. And guess what? It wasn't the last time. Okay? There are a lot of people who think about what happened with the aircraft carrier. I think it was the Reagan that got, you know, a little too close to Fukushima in 2011. And a lot of people say, well, they just didn't understand. They didn't understand. Folks, we set off over 2,000 nuclear weapons above ground over the period of about a decade and a half. What the fuck don't you think they understand? Believe me, when the Army Corps of Engineers went into Nagasaki and Hiroshima after the fucking armistice was signed, after the unconditional surrender, when the fucking military went into fucking Japan and surveyed the damage weeks after the bombs went off, they knew exactly how bad radiation was. They knew exactly how fucking toxic that shit was. You don't think they understood that in 2001? No, they did. So I think they knew, and I think they did this on purpose. Now, it probably wasn't to test an anti-radiation pill. It's probably worse than that. Probably they just want to understand effects. Listen, a big part of studying radiation is studying effects. Effects on people, effects on plants, effects on life. That is truly a mystery, folks. There's a lot of even to this day, when it comes to the really fucked up effects of radiation, there are still some mysteries. So it's entirely plausible that they decided to use these soldiers, these men and women, as test subjects. And guess what? If you use them as test subjects, you probably can't give them any help. because then you would be admitting to something. You would be admitting that A, you knew, and B, yeah, it was really fucking terrible. Folks, there's no way the DOD admits to anything. Are you fucking kidding me? These are the people that marched, I think, a brigade's worth of Marines, I think even more than a brigade, into ground zero of a tactical nuclear weapon minutes after it went off back in the 50s. These are these kinds of people, people, okay? They do not give a fuck. They're like the honey badger on cocaine. They don't care. So I don't know. This story may be shocking to some of you. It does not shock me. But what is interesting is that it's come out. I mean, it's one of these cases where I say, holy fuck, under normal circumstances, it would be the kind of thing that would make me optimistic. But given the amount of fucking information that's coming out right now, it feels like, yeah, like I said earlier, it feels like a deliberate attempt to so overwhelm the population with quote-unquote truth that the population doesn't really know what's going on. Like, give them the truth about all these terrible conspiracies so they keep their eyes off what's really going on. The darker, darker agenda, the thing that's worse. Give them something that's pretty bad and true, so they don't look for something that's worse than bad. Next topic. Headline, where's the beef? : Missouri church leader tries to pay for gay sex with Arby's gift card. And I read on, and on the third day, God created fast food restaurant gift cards and gay dating apps. Yeah, so this is Nom de Plume, Tyler Durden, published Thursday, not yesterday, Thursday on Zero Hedge. And let's continue. That was the recent gospel, according to the leader of a Missouri church who allegedly tried to pay for sex on Grindr, a gay hookup app, using an Arby's card, according to the New York Post. Barry Cole Pointer attempted to bed college-age guys by offering to pay for their gas, clothes, and roast beef sandwiches, according to local authorities. He used the online handle DILF while communicating. DILF, wow. What the fuck? Pointer, 57, is a Church of Christ elder and professor at nearby Truman State University. He was busted after a student reported him and a cop went undercover on the app. Pointer then sent the officer a message saying he would love to have a sugar daddy relationship. He offered to fill up his gas tank, honestly, no pun intended, honestly, in exchange for sexual favors on December 3rd. Pointer said if the younger guy was willing, he might throw in an Arby's card, LOL. Yeah, LOL, that's funny. But the joke was on Pointer. When he showed up at the gas station for the meetup, he was met by officers and tried to flee. He was then pulled over several blocks away. He told police he was not doing anything with a minor and was only trying to help. He was charged with patronizing prostitution and faces up to 6 months in jail. Holy fuck. He has since been suspended from Truman State. I think that's where my ex-wife went to school. Though it is unclear whether or not he is still in a leadership role at the Church of Christ. Well, that's really great news. How do we unpack this story? As you all well know, I am a Christian. I am not gay. I also don't hate gay people. I have a lot of opinions about the issue of homosexuality related to my own religious beliefs, and I have to work through those on my own. On my own, I have to work through those questions, those issues. That's my fucking business. But do I hate people because they're gay or lesbian? No. Am I a little concerned about the number of genders that are multiplying right now? A little bit, because, yeah, it kind of seems bizarre. But frankly, I don't think this story is really about being gay. I think this story is another good example of an attack on the church. And here's the thing I'd say about an attack on the church. And when I say the church, I don't mean the Catholic Church or the fucking Church of Christ or any individual organization of churches. I'm talking about the Church of Jesus, which is the only church. It is the universal Christian church. It is the church you are in when you have faith. And so, yeah, you can call yourself a Catholic or a Lutheran, Baptist. I am unaffiliated. I'm just a Christian. No asterisk. But I do consider this attack on the church. Now, what does that mean, really? You know, when I say attack on the church, what do I mean? Well, the attack might not necessarily be from an outside agency. I brought up this quote before from the Spanish Civil War. It's a famous quote, and it's where the phrase fifth column comes from. And the quote goes like this. There are four columns outside Madrid. There are four columns outside Madrid. And there's a fifth column within. I think that Poynter, if this is true, if he actually did this, I think he is a good example of an attack that comes from within the congregation of Christ. And I don't know what to tell you. A lot of people will say to themselves, a lot of people who mock Christians will say, if you find a Christian who's sinning, ergo, it proves Christianity doesn't work. And that's one way of looking at it. Although, frankly, these same motherfuckers are often communists. And they'll say, well, that wasn't real communism. Venezuela's not real communism. China's not real communism. Russia wasn't real communism. Yeah, it's never real communism because millions of people die, and therefore, it was never real. Except for, you know, the dead bodies. Folks, if you're going to tell me that kind of bullshit, then why couldn't I just respond and say, well, he's not a real Christian? Because I think that's an oversimplification. I don't think it's that simple. Currently on planet Earth, there are multiple battles being fought between good and evil everywhere. And some of these battles involve physical action. And some of these are just spiritual. And the question is this, is this a man, is this a church leader who was a good man, who maybe had a predilection to being gay but had fought that desire his life and chosen not to be gay? I don't really know, because frankly, I believe every human being has desires. I have all kinds of desires, believe me. I desire a great many things, but just because you want something doesn't mean you need it. And just because you want or need something doesn't mean you get to have it. And just because you feel like you deserve it doesn't mean you should take it. Which means that just because you have impulses doesn't mean you should just act on them. You know, you're supposed to have consciousness. You're supposed to have the ability to be aware, self-awareness, reflection. These are features of a human brain. You're capable of executive function. You can choose to do something or you can choose not to. But you're not necessarily being driven by your compulsions. The message in a story like this is that, well, he's gay and there's no way to not be gay, and therefore he was always going to do this, and so therefore maybe the big problem is the Christian, not the gay. And I disagree. I'm not saying that if a person's gay, they're evil. I'm simply saying if you have a predilection or a desire or some compulsion, and then you act on it, that's a fucking choice. In the autumn of 2017, I went a little crazy. And there were lots of reasons, including doing about a whole fucking blotter's worth of LSD over 3 weeks. And believe me, you shouldn't do LSD. You probably shouldn't do it every other day for 3 weeks. You probably shouldn't. But the point is, that was a choice, people. The devil didn't make me do LSD. No one else made me do it. I chose to do it. I was an old man. You telling me someone made me do it? No. And when I chose to do it, I chose to go down a path of evil. When I chose to be in that place, I chose to make more room in my heart for the devil than Jesus. That's the truth, folks. When I look at the story of this church leader, this pointer guy, I don't see a simple black and white story. I think it's complicated. And I'll add this as well. I don't really understand that there's an actual crime here. I'm not saying there's not a moral issue here. There's probably a moral issue, but I don't see the crime. Here's a general rule. You know, for those of you who consider yourselves libertarians or minarchists, a general rule amongst true libertarians is that if there is no victim, there is no crime. And I'm sorry, but if you're a 20-something trying to make ends meet and you're on Grindr and you're trying to make a few extra bucks, yeah, probably 50-year-old men shouldn't be fucking you, but you should also probably not be fucking 50-year-old men. And if you don't want to take responsibility, I'll go a step fucking further. What the fuck were your parents doing when you were growing up? Did they teach you anything? Or did they assume that the public schools were going to teach you values? Because if that's the assumption, if the assumption is the public schools were teaching you values, right and wrong, blah, 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 then your parents made a mistake. So I don't think this is as simple as some old dude taking advantage of young people. I think that there are some young dudes taking advantage of old people too. Guess what? Young people can be crafty. Young people can be evil. Young people can be manipulative. Get real. And I don't know how much more time I want to spend on this because, again, this is a weird story for me. I'm a Christian. I also think Christians are under attack. I'm a Christian. I also think that many people love to blame every problem of human history on Christians. I think rightly so, I would blame many things on the Vatican, but as I've stated in the past, there is virtually nothing Christian about the Vatican. Catholics, some Catholics might be Christians, but the fucking papacy is Roman. It's always been Roman. It will be Roman until it's destroyed. If you listen to my podcast and you enjoy it, there'll be a donation link in the description area for Venmo, and there's one on my homepage for SoundCloud, so you can go there too. There's also an email you can send me if you want to come up with a different way of helping me out. And by all means, one way to help me out is to talk about the Little Saigon Report. Maybe even the crappy podcasts are still kind of good. You can tell your friends, you can tell your wife, your husband, your gay lover. Tell whoever you want to, okay? However, in terms of financial support, please only support, you know, if you have the money. If you're going to put it on the credit card, if you can't make ends meet, don't help me. It's okay. I'm okay with you listening for free. I wouldn't put it out there for free if I wasn't okay with it. It's not like I have a ton of listeners. But if you do have the money and you've taken care of your food, your water, your shelter, your cats, your dogs, and the people you love, and you still have a few bucks left over and you want to help out, Uncle Dan ain't going to say no, you fuck. I ain't going to turn down $5 for an 8-ball. I'm not going to turn down money for the hookers off of Pike Place. I'm not going to turn down cash that gets me a little rock a crack. And I hope you guys have a great Saturday. And, you know, watch out for crazy dudes who pull up to you in convertibles, wearing Hawaiian shirts, talking to you about, have you ever been a woman? Can you imagine that elder, church elder, in his little grinder fucking message thread saying, have you ever been a woman? Have you ever been some redneck's wet dream? Have you? Have you had to get in contact with your feminine side? Have you? Have a great Saturday.